This is Like Mind, Like Body, a podcast about the surprising ways our thoughts and feelings impact our physical health. I'm your host, Laura Sago, and each week I'll interview researchers, physicians, and ordinary people who have incredible stories to tell about the power of the mind-body connection. This podcast is brought to you by Curable, an app that helps you manage chronic pain symptoms. You can download Curable on the Apple App Store, on Google Play, or visit our website at www.curablehealth.com. On today's episode, I am speaking with Dr. Jen Murphy. Dr. Murphy is a pain psychologist who spent the bulk of her career scaling safe, effective ways to treat chronic pain at the United States Department of Veterans Affairs, or the VA, as you'll hear us call it. As the VA's master trainer, Dr. Murphy has helped to train over 500 healthcare practitioners in a whole-person treatment approach. She also served as the lead author for the VA's manual on cognitive behavioral therapy. Today, she'll give us a peek behind the curtain at how the VA approaches chronic pain, what the private sector can learn from that, and how civilians can start to take advantage of some of the VA's most effective strategies from the comfort of their own homes. Let's get to it. Jen, thank you so much for joining us today. I am thrilled to dive into a little bit more about your background and what you have learned about chronic pain over the years. You have such an interesting combination of things in your background. So I really want to start there. You started out your career in a very traditional psych background, and then eventually found your way over to the VA. Can you walk me through how that process unfolded?
Yes, absolutely. And thank you for having me. I really feel like everything just happened in a very serendipitous way for me, and I feel very grateful about that. As you mentioned, I had more of a traditional kind of psychodynamic education, which provided me with a lot of good background, frankly, for a variety of clinical presentations. But what I was really interested in was learning more about the connection between the mind and the body. And so that's really what led me to do some of my training at the VA, which so many people do, because it really is a setting in a large hospital system where you can focus a bit more easily in areas of health psychology.
Mm-hmm. And then once you got to the Tampa VA, that's when your focus started to shift more towards studying chronic pain specifically. So tell me about what that experience was like.
I was fortunate enough, really in my first job with Dr. Michael Clark, who was my mentor at the Tampa VA, and kind of ended up there not knowing that it was a bit of a pain mecca, definitely in the VA system, but really in the entire country, where they have the only inpatient chronic pain rehab program, and just a lot of support around ways to assist individuals with chronic pain outside of a strictly kind of biomedical orientation. And so I had an interest in pain going in, but I ended up in a setting that really helped to grow and develop that and really helped me, you know, fall in love with the work, the patient population, the people going through the everyday experience that was so challenging, and wanting to help them.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you were convinced pretty early on in your career that pain was a path that you wanted to pursue, which I find surprising because what I hear from a lot of healthcare professionals and mental health professionals is that they initially shied away from treating in particular chronic pain, because they felt ill-equipped by their medical training to really give these patients the solutions that they needed. What caused you to have the opposite reaction and get excited about treating something that is so complex and challenging?
Your points are so true, and it's something that, you know, since I've been doing this work, you know, a lot of what we try to talk to other professionals, providers about is how to feel more competent and better equipped to not only not be scared to ask people about their pain conditions, but also give them some tools to have those kinds of conversations, the language to use. But I, you know, I want to make sure to answer your question directly. So I think a couple of things for me. One was, again, that setting that I was in. It was a very strong belief among the team of providers that I worked with that it was very important to treat the whole person. Mm-hmm. And everybody shares this philosophy, and everyone really has a passion for the work. And I think there was something, you know, nurturing, contagious about that. I wasn't in a primary care clinic, for instance, where the appointments are 20 minutes and the physician say has 20 things to deal with. And also something very special about that program at this year is the 30th anniversary of this program. And so they had been doing it for a long time and they knew that it worked. And while it's, I think, scary for anyone to start in a new area, once you start to see the progress that people make, it's incredibly inspiring, and you learn so much from the individuals who are in treatment. And of course, you learn so much from the people who are helping with their treatment. And this program was also, it is currently, it's led by a psychologist, which is unusual for a pain program, because I think typically, like many things with pain, it's sort of physician led. And while the medical piece is an important consultative piece, it's an important piece of evaluation and getting the best treatment plan together, everybody plays this equally important role. So physical therapists, occupational therapists, you know, it's truly, you know, vocational therapists, all of these different people who are having their input. You know, this is complex. We can't address this from one particular standpoint. We have to look at the whole person, find out what they want out of treatment, and then how do we help get them there?
Mm-hmm. And what do you think has been the most rewarding part of working with this population?
There's so many rewarding things about doing this work, but I think one of them is being able to help somebody who often comes in highly, you know, a range of ambivalent to suspicious to disbelieving to, you know, it's not often like, I can't, I'm so happy to be here. I can't wait to talk to you. But to be able to say, you know, I know you can do this. I know this is really hard to believe. Are you willing to sort of take this trip with me? Are you willing to do this? Let's, you know, experiment and see if it helps. And then to see really the transformation in lives, it's just the most beautiful, you know, experience that I think you can have as a healthcare provider. And so I feel it's been a privilege to work with this population and to have discovered that.
Yeah. And when people first enter into this interdisciplinary pain program, I'm guessing it's much more brain-centric and whole person-centric than the other approaches that they've tried in the past, maybe with a greater emphasis on psychology than they're used to. What is the initial reaction like as you have those first conversations?
You know, a quarter of people are incredibly open and enthusiastic and want to engage immediately. A quarter aren't interested. just aren't, you know, and maybe they will be in a year or 5 years or, and then the middle 50% are, they're, you know, somewhere between ambivalent and somewhat, but you know, they're somewhere in the middle, but if they're open enough to even engage, then what seems to happen is that you see a lot of positive reinforcement as you actually get going in treatment. I mean, again, I don't know if what I'm saying, you know, I've listened to some of your podcasts and I think, you know, with your app and things like that, you may see some parallel process there, you know, where if you're willing to try it, you know, things don't happen overnight, but they do happen, you know, and you try to use that traction, you know, to reinforce the good things that are happening and really build on those. And then people become these amazing champions once they get through it because they're like, oh my gosh, you know, I don't even recognize myself, which is this, you know, incredible outcome to be able to see.
Right. Absolutely. And we see that too. I compare it very frequently to just the idea of deciding that you want to get healthy in the traditional sense of eating better and exercising more. You can't just have one salad and go to the gym once and say, okay, how do I feel after that? What did that do? Am I at my goals? Yes or no? You have to be committed enough to say, I'm going to give this a shot for a month and see what happens and eat a month's worth of salads and healthy food and go to the gym on a regular basis for a month and then start to gauge whether anything is shifting, whether your mind feels different, whether your body feels different, et cetera. So we definitely also see the same thing where if there's no willingness up front, there's almost no point to someone even testing the waters because they won't see the results that they want overnight. But if someone is open-minded enough to give it a slightly more extended shot, then it can work wonders. And the mindset, you know, mindset affects any sort of treatment that you're going through, even even pills. So, you know, that's always a factor as well. But to a certain extent, I would think that many of the patients going through your program are already familiar with a similar structure from the mental health world because there is so much overlap. There's so much comorbidity between chronic pain, depression, anxiety, and I would think that PTSD is extremely relevant in the work that you are doing at the VA. So when patients are coming through with these comorbidities, are you trying to address both of those within the program at the same time, or how does that work?
So our program focuses on pain rehabilitation. However, the vast majority, well over 90% of our patients, our participants, have some kind of a psychiatric comorbidity, whether it's depression, anxiety, and a large percentage of those, it is also PTSD. And we know that individuals who have been exposed to trauma are really more vulnerable for developing issues with chronic pain. So it's something that we're keenly aware of, and it's very important in terms of our work. There's a few things that I think are important to mention with that. One is that a lot of the work that we do in our pain programs and even in something like CBT for pain, because we also see this on an outpatient basis on a regularly, we see individuals for CBT who also have PTSD and perhaps are not quite ready to engage in their treatment for PTSD to address those issues. It may be too challenging to engage in that kind of treatment. What we find is that a lot of the work that we do to address chronic pain issues, also there's a great deal of overlap with the kinds of things that we might do to address PTSD as well. So the hallmark of both pain and PTSD as far as a reaction is avoidance. So I typically will always mention that kind of from the outset with somebody, that with PTSD, the reaction is often to just avoid, because there's a painful stimulus and we don't want to expose ourselves to that. And that's very much the process with pain as well. We see a lot of avoidance that ends up being unhelpful. So what we're really talking about as far as treatment goes is approach. You know, how do we approach in a gradual, safe way so that we can start to expose ourselves and see that this is not, in fact, going to be harmful in the same way that we thought it might be. And that if we continue to approach and kind of deprogram that a bit, we're actually going to be helped significantly and start making strides. And there is this, you know, there's a lot of theoretical background there, but, you know, there's certainly mutual maintenance models of pain and PTSD. So if we can work on the approach piece, we are potentially able to assist with not only pain-related symptoms, but also PTSD-related symptoms. And so that is something that we're able to see in our treatment. It isn't to say that we could necessarily sufficiently address someone's PTSD. If more treatment is needed, what we hope is that once some of these positive lifestyle changes start to happen, and hopefully they have a good experience in a program or with a therapist, that they are in fact more open to receiving a referral and going to see somebody who's maybe focused on PTSD symptoms specifically, if that's still needed.
Mm-hmm. Are there any experiences you've had with patients or stories that just stick out in your mind as, you know, one of the most drastic transformations you've seen from chronic pain and these comorbidities of depression, anxiety, and PTSD?
I've seen so many that have been really inspiring to me. I think, you know, the ones that stick out tend to be probably some of the more extreme cases. So, you know, for instance, a man, which I think, you know, the demographics are very kind of common for the VA. So a man who's, say, 60, I'm thinking of one person specifically who was a Vietnam era veteran, really has never sufficiently addressed his PTSD symptoms or his chronic pain. And this is somebody who, you know, had been masking all of those symptoms, frankly, with first alcohol and then opioids. So was not using both alcohol and opioids when I saw him for treatment, but really had transitioned from kind of numbing with alcohol to numbing with now a fairly high dose of opioids. And he was having a lot of difficulties, particularly in his marriage. That is something that we see on a somewhat regular basis, where there's really fractured relationships, particularly around opioids. And so he agreed to come into the program and actually called me before his admission date, tearful, because he was so scared and worried about, you know, what was going to happen, and very worried about his pain level. But I think, I'm sure, had a lot of other concerns as well that he probably wasn't even able to voice at that time. But he had, you know, at first a somewhat rocky time in our program, but we were able to just provide that high level of support to him, help him get through it. One thing that we do see sometimes is once we do start tapering off of medication, there can be a little bit more of an awareness of some of those challenging psychiatric symptoms that maybe have been masked by something like an opioid medication. And so a lot of time was spent with him, you know, kind of being able to discuss many of those types of symptoms that were emerging that were more PTSD related. And by the end of the second week of our program, I mean, he was interacting like a different person, but also just reported by the end how incredibly grateful, clear-headed. He actually went into more intensive PTSD treatment. He, you know, requested to come back as a, you know, champion for the program. That's one thing that we do that's incredibly helpful, which is for individuals that do really well and they want to help other people, they will come back and actually, you know, speak to people, do a group, you know, that kind of peer support, which again is, I know, something you are very familiar with, you know, what they're able to share with each other and how they can inspire each other is so much more powerful than anything, you know, I could ever say. Mm-hmm. The camaraderie of the military, and of course, their experience with pain. And he was somebody who actually, if you at the very beginning, when you evaluated him for the program, there's probably a lot of people who said, you know, I don't think he, you know, who would have said, I don't know that he's a good candidate, or, and it's something that I've learned over the years. You cannot predict that, you know, if somebody's willing and they can potentially be helped by these kinds of treatments, then they should participate. Those have been some of the greatest success stories, or the people who from the beginning, you know, maybe on paper didn't look like it might go that well, but those are some of the greatest success stories, or the people who have those huge changes and their lives are really kind of turned around in a more significant way.
Yeah. I mean, what you're saying about numbing and avoidance, I mean, those are really, those are like the puppet masters of chronic pain, depression, anxiety, PTSD, all of it, you know? And it just, it breaks my heart to think about especially veterans who are coming back from what we know to be, in many cases, traumatic situations. And what do we currently do? And what does the VA plan to do more of in order to not let them fall into that cycle to begin with, to never start the cycle of numbing with alcohol and opioids and all of this, and to sort of start to address anything that comes up from a more holistic, full mind, full body, whole person perspective right away?
Well, thankfully in the VA, there's been major shifts, even more so than the private sector, partially because that can be managed better in our healthcare system. But one thing the VA is doing and has done is to just significantly reduce the amount of people who are started on opioids for chronic pain. That used to be, across the country, of course, a commonplace, you know, here, start with this, and then quickly you increase a dose, you increase a dose. And many of those prescriptions were being given to our returning veterans. And so now we know that that isn't happening. And so, you know, that's one positive thing, is we're not sort of setting people up in this way. We're actually switching to a very different narrative, which is in fact about the whole person. So we have so many more programs to offer. We have so many more people with skills around how can I help someone in a, you know, from a behavioral health standpoint, you know, so we're not just talking about medications. Now you're going to talk to our pain psychologist and they're going to talk to you about all these different things that may be able to help give you more control over your own pain, so you don't have to feel like you're relying on a pill or a prescriber. There's been just a dramatic shift, I think, in the approach overall, and in, say, this type of interdisciplinary program. This is where we've been coming from for a long time. But it's not necessarily been the mindset of, you know, your family medicine doc out in the community, or even a primary care provider at a VA, you know. Right. So we're really trying to help everyone shift to, you know, help with that kind of cultural transformation.
Yes. And so what can regular people do now? The private sector is still going to take quite a while to catch up even to where the VA is. And the VA is still doing more to grow in this area. A regular person who sees themselves in this story, who knows that, you know, they have been avoiding things, or perhaps they've been diagnosed with PTSD and they have chronic pain symptoms and they want to tie these things together and acknowledge them. They may or may not have gotten guidance from their primary care physician on exactly what to do about that. They may or may not be on opioids. What do you recommend to that common person at the mercy of the private healthcare sector to do? What can they proactively do to start unwinding that for themselves?
The most accessible options are obviously the kinds of things like what you're doing. So the things that are completely accessible really to everybody. So there's, you know, a number of apps that are available for people. There's a variety of resources online. The American Chronic Pain Association is a great organization, provides a lot of wonderful resources. And so I think the first step is starting with that sort of education. What does it look like? And what are some of the basic things that I might be able to start to do on my own if I don't have the assistance of a healthcare provider? So, we tend to always start out with relaxation techniques, you know, to help change our response to pain, to decrease muscle tension, to gain more control over how our body reacts to pain, to decrease that stress that's exhibited in us physically. Starting to make some of those changes individually through some of the resources that are more accessible, I think is one thing. The tough part about it is I certainly realize that takes a pretty motivated person, you know, and I know that it can be done. I think you always have to talk to people about, you know, the message that you said before, you can't have one salad and take one walk, you know, so trying to make sure that people know that do it for a week, do it for a couple weeks, do it for a month, see if you notice anything, you know, so give it a fair trial, you know,
right.
And see, because I think sometimes people do something once and go, that didn't do anything.
Yeah. And let's keep in perspective, even within your program, which is as supportive as you can get, you have got interdisciplinary professionals surrounding you, rooting for you, monitoring your care. And even then, the program is 3 weeks long, not one day.
Absolutely. And it takes a while for people to really come around sometimes, you know, I mean, it really, to make these kinds of changes. And this is the tough, this is the challenge, you know, of what we do is that what really needs to happen for things to, I think, get better for individuals who have chronic pain very much involves these lifestyle changes. And I certainly will be the first to tell you, you know, it is not easy to make behavioral changes. You know, you can know in your brain all day long that it would be great if you went for a work, you know, and worked out. But it may be very hard to get you to the gym or get you to that class or, you know, and so the doing it part is the challenge of all of this. And then of course, you know, keep it up knowing that you're going to sort of backslide sometimes and it's not always going to be perfect and that's okay. You know, I mean, the next step would be, in fact, you know, getting a referral to somebody who potentially has some behavioral health knowledge, you know, so that you could actually go talk to someone who could help you facilitate making some of these changes. You know, sometimes having an accountability partner can be a really good thing. American Chronic Pain Association, ACPA, they have these peer-led groups they do trainings in them. And it's really just a system of support of other people who have chronic pain and helping to keep each other on the right path, you know, which we all need and has been very helpful. But as you mentioned, there are places, you know, like Mayo and Cleveland Clinic that do have some, there's one in Jacksonville here as well, that it's available in the private sector. But I do realize that it always depends on insurance and, mm-hmm. and resources. And I certainly know that I wouldn't be able to pay out of pocket to go to a program like that.
Neither know? Would so, I.
Yeah. You have to think creatively about what else, right. You know, what else can you do?
And I think what you say about finding, you know, a supportive community, chronic pain can feel so isolating if you are perhaps the only person in your family unit or something that's going through it. And having that supportive community has been so critical for the folks who I've seen go through the program and really have success. And on top of that, I actually think it's very critical to find a tribe of folks who want to keep the same mindset that you do about it. I've heard people say often that they've joined a bunch of chronic pain support groups online that have actually ended up dragging them down because it's a lot mm-hmm. of, I'm never going to get better, just a lot of venting and not a lot of things you can do or sharing helpful resources or whatever. And so the people I've seen find more positive, encouraging communities that align with their mindset. We've got a group for our users on Facebook, the Curable Community, and the things that people post in there, they just love each other. It's so beautiful to watch. They're like best friends from across the globe. And so I think that part, you know, like it doesn't cost a lot to find other people like you out there and realize that your experience is not, in fact, an isolated experience. You are connected to other people who are going through similar experiences.
No, absolutely. And I love that. And it's exactly what you said. It's part of, even in our healthcare system, we don't do sort of open support groups because of what you said. It can really devolve, unfortunately, you know, mm-hmm. in a negative direction. And so it's always better to have kind of a productive message, you know, or theme mm-hmm. so that we're able to keep things, again, not rose colored in an unrealistic way, but just kind of focused in a positive direction, because I do think that can be, you know, a risk potentially if you don't have that. So I think that's absolutely, you know, a great, great piece of a great nugget of wisdom there is to find, you know, find people that lift you up or a community that lifts you up or, you know, even a few friends or a few, you know what I mean? But really mm-hmm. Where you can build off of each other and also clearly building off of each other also means when one person is down, you know, other people help pull them up, you know, exactly. And I think that just can be so incredibly helpful. It's just so important to come up with a plan for how is this going to look moving forward and what are the supportive pieces and when a bad day happens, you know, what are the different things that you can do potentially, you know, to help get through that and get to tomorrow, which is going to be a better day.
Right. Find the people who will give you the advice that you would want to give yourself if you weren't in such a bad place. That's how I try to live my life. Yeah. Well, that's so wonderful. Is there any other parting advice or words of wisdom that you have for anyone who's listening out there and currently struggling or trying to find their way on their healing journey?
I do hope that people are kind of empowered by this idea that, you know, not only can they find supportive people in the community, but also that there are some things that are very accessible that they can incorporate into their lives day to day to help, you know, turn down the volume on the intensity of that pain and reduce the negative impacts on their life, you know. And I always, you know, I never want for that to sound, you know, minimizing in any way, because in terms of the pain not being severe, But I always want people to feel kind of empowered that there are things that they can actually do instead of feeling completely, you know, reliant on the healthcare system or feeling like, you know, they've tried everything and nothing works.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. And I just want to thank you also in a broader sense for the work that you're doing and for everything that you're doing to help scale this, not only in the VA, but I know you're doing several studies with partners in the private sector to try and bring this approach to a much broader audience on a larger scale. And so thank you so much for all of the work that you are doing one-on-one with patients, as well as to help scale the whole approach. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
No, thank you. Like I said, I really do mean that it's my privilege to do this work, and I feel incredibly grateful to be able to work with individuals who have chronic pain and make any impact at all. It's really been the privilege of my life.
That's wonderful.
Thanks for listening to Like Mind, Like Body. If you enjoyed this podcast, don't forget to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. And if you related to anything that Dr. Murphy said, then you should definitely check out the Curable app and see if any of the guided exercises or education can help you to get onto the right track. You can try it for free by downloading the Curable app in the Apple App Store or on Google Play, or just by visiting our website at curablehealth.com. That is all for today. See you later. Bye.